Okay, today I'm joined by Paul Grignon, the creator of Money as Debt. Thank you very much for joining me today, Mr. Grignon.
Oh, please be with it.
All right. Could you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in the monetary system?
I've been asked that question a few times, and it's a little bit fuzzy as to how exactly I got interested in it. I got started on the project that the Money as Debt project by being hired to do a video of a monetary investigator reformer named Tim Madden, and that's how I got into it in depth. But I do actually remember thinking, I wish somebody would pay me to make a cartoon of the Goldsmith's Tale. I remember thinking that, and it was 2 weeks later that I got this job, which eventually allowed me to actually do that because that was what was really needed. But how I got it, obviously money is very fundamental to everything we do, fundamental to how our culture works. And so, and it's really quite astonishing that we think nothing about money as we grow up. We're not taught anything. Most of us never question.
It certainly is astonishing. So let's take some time to talk a little bit about money and what you lay out in the Money as Debt movie. First, can you try to lay out in sort of simple terms, where does money come from?
It comes from your pledge to pay it back. When you sign for a loan, you're basically giving the bank an IOU. And when the bank receives that IOU, they give you a bank's IOU in return. And the bank's IOU, we've been conditioned to think of as money. That's what we write checks on. When we have a bank account that we have to put money in, and that we write checks on that. But if you take a loan, the bank simply puts the numbers into your account, and you draw on those numbers. The numbers didn't exist until you signed the document for the loan.
So you're saying that the money is actually created as a bank loan?
Yeah, money as debt. It's been a gradual process, but in the last 30 years, the proportion of money that created as debt has exploded. And it's exploding exponentially right now. And God knows, I mean, nobody can look at the debt growth curve and think this is going to go on forever. It's practically vertical already, the rate at which money is being created.
All right. So what is fractional reserve banking, and how does that affect the money supply?
Well, the fractional reserve system is a way of that governments use to create some rules to run banking. Now, the Canadian banks apparently don't have that anymore since Mulroney. We actually don't really have a fractional reserve system. The bank just run on their sense of how much they can lend out and get away with it. But in the country, in the United States, still there are government ratios that allow the central bank to control how much money is created.
And you're saying that in Canada, there's actually no set limit on the fractional reserve system?
No statutory reserves with the central bank required either, which apparently is a law to the government that was just absolutely dwarfs the Quebec patronage scandal, right? It's in the billions, and absolutely no mention. And if you tried to explain it to people, they wouldn't even know what you're talking about, that they got rid of for billions because the banks, you don't have to put statutory reserves into the Bank of Canada according to the fractional reserve system. And the government used to tap into that as interest-free money. And so there's no interest-free money there, so they have to borrow it from the bank that used to have to put it there. And they have to borrow it with interest, which then costs all of them for that. And according to Bill Krem, with the Committee on Monetary and Economic Reform, the COMER, and he's a very senior economist, I've been doing this for a long time, and I forget how many billions it was, but it was billions, not millions.
So could you explain for our audience, what is the statutory reserve?
When the bank has to have a deposit of money at the central bank, and that money they have to deposit has to be either federal cash or some very close equivalent. And sometimes different countries use different systems. I'm not familiar with the details of all of them, but whatever is eligible to be counted as central bank money, it's called high-powered money. And generally, I mean, cash is definitely always allowed. And if that's deposited, that's your central bank, then you're allowed to multiply from that. It's kind of like a license to go into business, really.
Really? And in Canada...
But it allows the central bank to control the total amount of multiples by controlling the first, the M1, the original supply of money.
Hmm. And in Canada, that statutory reserve requirement has been eliminated.
Yes.
That is staggering. Let's get a little bit into the Bank of Canada then. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about the Bank of Canada and how it's how it operates as a central bank?
Well, I'm not really an expert on the Bank of Canada, but as I understand, it was set up by Mackenzie King at the end of the to get Canada out of the Depression. Basically, the Depression wasn't caused by a lack of resources; it was caused just by a lack of money to make the exchange of things feasible. And plus, when we have a lack of money, money becomes worth more, and people who are in debt then can't earn enough to pay off their debts, and everybody gets foreclosed on. So that's what we call a depression. So to get us out of a depression, he just created the Bank of Canada, and that bank just spent money through the government, through an intricate mechanism. But whatever it is, what the essential is that the bank simply created money, and it was interest-free money. It wasn't owed with interest on it. Not only that, if you used a different system, governments could simply create money to spend it, and they would have to find a way to destroy it to balance, you know, control the total amount. But there's different concepts, and the way we think about money has been so limited because we're never taught to think about it. You know, we're just taught to unquestionably accept that this is the way money is. And money has been changing. You know, most people's brains are wired to the idea that money is like gold. Right? There's, you know, you exchange this little piece of paper or these numbers in your account and you get something for it, so it seems to have intrinsic value, but every bit of it actually represents a debt. We're just exchanging, we're using a bunch of IOUs as money.
So what then is your positive solution to replacing the system of money as debt? In the movie, it seems that you're advocating a form of fiat money that is just spent into existence by the government that, on infrastructure that's going to retain its value. But can you tell us a little bit more about that idea?
Well, I've had a lot of people email me some pretty big criticisms of that, but they failed to make the other assumption that if we ever got monetary reform, we would also have a benign, sensible government with a conscience. Because otherwise, this is what's wrong with the world now is the government just has an unlicensed. Whatever they need money for, like a war in Iraq, they just create more money and put it on the bill for the future, and it's on the grandkids and the great grandkids. And somebody told me the British have just finished paying off the Napoleonic Wars. Yeah, that is one of the problems. But the context in which I make that suggestion is actually in terms of an economic collapse in which people are stuck with their own local resources. And one of the local resources you have to have to make any use of your other local resources is a money system. And if you have to create your own and you don't have anything to create it with, then, you know, you still need bookkeeping, of course, but you can create it with your own sort of fiat money system. I envision that it would work best at the municipal level, back to the city-state. If you were to have an economic collapse and the political structures sort of became so dysfunctional that we had, trying to imagine what a collapse is. I'm sure there's many different ways it can happen. But basically, you're more on your own than you've ever been.
Mm.
And you have to have your own money system. And so getting people to understand how to create one, just to get out of the box of ignorance most of us were educated into, that's the purpose of the movie.
In the movie, you mentioned the LETS system as a money system that can be owned and operated by a community. But could you explain a little bit, what is the LTS idea?
These systems create money as needed, like if you want to make an exchange, then you create money of your own. It's debt. It's again, it's all, you know, there's a bunch of different ones. The Tamworth Hour is the other one I illustrated. They fundamentally work on people issuing their own money as debt. So it's not necessarily a negative thing, although it suffers from the same problem. If people aren't willing to get into debt, then the supply of money disappears. And that's the fundamental problem with money, is that you have to keep getting further and further into debt collectively to have enough money to make the system work, which is what we're doing, right? The debts just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And you can't get out of it. If you got rid of the debt, there'd be no money. So that would be an even bigger disaster.
Yeah, I think that's something that few people understand is, yeah, to get out of debt actually means to erase the money supply.
Erase the money supply, that's right. It sounds so good, and for each of us it's a great, great blessing to get rid of our debts and have more money. I put it in the movie, for individuals to pay off their debts will mean they have more money, but if everybody paid off their debts, we'd have no money.
Absolutely. I believe it's, yay, no more cat food was the line from the movie.
It was somewhere, yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit, how long did it take to produce that documentary?
The actual last, because there was a little 17-minute version I did first that went with the original video I was hired to do, but it was a sort of my experiment. And if I count all those hours, I'd say it was probably about 3,600. And it was 2,500 hours approximately to do the last. The final finish on that one, which I put it in over 6 months, less than 6 months.
So what has the response been to the documentary so far?
Oh, pretty enthusiastic. I mean, it's not a subject you're going to sell to millions of people yet. I think someday it might, but we've had steady sales, especially through Money Masters, the Money Masters site where they get both movies. Well, yes, the main outlet so far from my movie has actually been themoneymasters.com, because I owe a great debt to that, the producers of that movie, because they had contained all the historical background. The only problem with it being is it's so long, I found it very difficult to get people to watch. But those who are interested usually watch it with their jaws kind of hanging down, because you see so much history that makes so much sense that you never ever heard before. I mean, inexplicable things like, why did Americans end up killing each other over slavery? I mean, freeing the slaves was a tactic. The real reasons for the Civil War all had to do with finances and banks and people trying to get power over the money system. As had most wars been.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
When you see history in that context, so there's another great movie, and my movie explains the mechanism in more detail, so people understand it. And I'm working on a sequel to take it even to another level of depth.
Really? That's excellent. When could we expect the sequel?
I was hoping by the end of this year, but the sequel is like two Money as Debts. It's two parts, and it's a full-length movie. Or it will be when it's done. I'm sort of getting near the halfway through the rough.
Yeah, okay. So could you direct our listeners to your website where they can find out some more information about the documentary?
Well, my website is moneyasdebt.net. And there's a reference page. There's a little page about how the movie was made and what it was made with. Because, that's another thing, is making a whole animated movie by myself. It's something that's only been technically feasible recently, advances in animation software. Still a lot of work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still really a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it doesn't cost any money. That's the beauty of it. You can just sit here. I mean, I have to keep my computers and software current, but other than that, I don't have to travel. I don't have to hire people. So, pretty cool way to make movies.
The liberty that comes with technology, I think.
I've been waiting for it. I was a painter, right? A solitary pursuit. So as a working in teams on things, it's not my normal way to do things. Have done it, but it's not my normal mode of operation. It's complete individual freedom, where I answer to no one.
Okay, on that note, I think we'll leave it there. Mr. Grignot, thank you very much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me, James.